Blog Talk Radio.
What you want, baby, I got. Hey, coffee party listeners everywhere around the world. This is Debbie Lynn Molyneux checking in today for Lunch with Loudon. And we are taking a short holiday hiatus, or maybe a long one, depends on your point of view, and we'll be returning back in January, where Janine is going to be having a couple of new co-hosts, so I hope you'll all be very welcoming to them. I want to have a couple of announcements first before we get to today's show. The first thing is to make sure to check out the January book club that we're doing with Coffee Party. We're all reading Unstoppable by Ralph Nader, and the full title is actually Unstoppable, the Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. And we're hoping that we're going to get to actually talk to Mr. Nader himself. We're waiting to hear back, but if not, we're going to have a great conversation amongst ourselves anyway on this book club right around January 26th on Coffee Party's birthday. The next thing is that I'd just like to announce or let you guys know about is that there's a lot of end-of-year giving happening right now, and we really encourage you, if you are finding value in our radio shows and our Facebook posts, getting the news delivered to you in a different way, please consider giving to coffeepartyusa.com during your end-of-year giving. And you can also find membership available online at coffeepartyusa.com, and we appreciate everything. It is you, our members and our listeners and our Facebook supporters, who really make Coffee Party what it is today, and we very much appreciate your participation with us. And now on to the show today. We have a roughly 30-minute show from Tim Danahy that is the story about one man's attempt to run for Congress in his home district. And if you don't believe that money has taken over the government, you need to listen to his story about this longtime party loyalist who offered to be a candidate since no one wanted to oppose the established political party in this uncompetitive, redistricted congressional seat. Well, Vic Myers, who is the gentleman we're talking about, encountered party leaders who wouldn't support him unless he put in $200,000 of his own seed money or raised it, more likely put it in himself. And then a partisan newspaper ordered its reporter to cover a Chihuahua race rather than talk to him. And then when he started organizing his own fundraisers, you know, trying to come up with that seed money, party leaders came in from other districts, discouraged people from contributing to his campaign, and poached contributions for other candidates. This is really just kind of the epitome of it's no longer Mr. Smith's Washington. It's not even our Washington. So I'm going to go ahead and hit play on this episode, and I hope you guys have a great holiday season, and we'll be back after the first of the year.
From Lost Coffee in Castle Rock, Colorado, welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com. And the shows this week all deal with an American self-examination about our principles, our values, and whether we as a nation are living up to the standards we claim for ourselves. For example, yesterday's discussion about the torture report, corporate personhood, and that the recent omnibus spending bill brought the question to bear: is America what we believe it should be? And this subject includes our belief that anyone can be president of the United States. We've been told that since a child, because the sanctity of elections and equal access to the political process enables us to do that. But is that true? Can anybody run for government office and have a realistic chance for winning? Or is the process controlled by outside forces? Our guest today tested the American principle that anyone can run for elected office, and Vic Myers ran as a Democrat for the U.S. Congress in Colorado's 4th District. He's an active citizen with a full-time job, he loves our country, and believes in our founding principles. But when he ran for Congress, he learned a lesson about how the system works, and he's here to share it with us. Vic, welcome to the Tim Danahy Show.
Thanks for having me on again, Tim.
It's a delight to have you here. We spoke once before during the campaign, and you really impressed me because you went up to the very northeast portion of your district and met with the climate marchers who were walking through the country. And I said, hey, that Vic Myers is a class act. You know, I was really impressed with that.
I was impressed with the Climate Marchers.
Yeah, they're good people and everything. But Vic, just to give a background, tell us a little bit about, you know, your political life. Were you involved with, like, local politics and you worked your way through the Democratic Party to make yourself a candidate?
No. Fresh out of college, I was involved. I ran in a more conservative, less hopeful district for the state house, but I only ran because nobody was going to, so I told the party, put me on the ballot and I'll do what I can. It wasn't a real effort like this one was. Outside of that, I was on the school board in Trinidad because I wanted to improve my kids' education. I was there for 4 years, and outside of that, you know, I've served in the past on precincts and been active in the party, but I haven't really been active for a long time.
So if I can put it this way, then, you know, you were involved with local politics, a good community activist kind of guy, and then you decided that, you know, you wanted to run for Congress because?
Well, I was laid up with a back injury, and I'm watching Congress every day, and you know, we're all getting sick and tired of the way Congress is failing us. And while I was laid up, I couldn't do anything but watch TV, literally. And March 23rd of 2013 was the day that the Senate passed the first budget in over 4 years. And John Boehner and others had been going on TV every day for at least 2 weeks, blasting the president and the Senate for not passing a budget. It was less than 5 minutes after the Senate passed the budget that John Boehner and Paul Ryan got in front of those same TV cameras and declared that they wouldn't work with the Senate on passing a budget. So that was the moment that I decided that I have to, you know, I can do a better job in Congress than they can. So I called up the party and I said, hey, who's going to run against Cory Gardner? And they said, nobody. I said, well, then I'm going to. And they said, good luck. We're not going to help you.
Yeah, well, that becomes an important point, because Colorado's 4th district, for people around the country and around the world who are listening, it's kind of a rural district. It has a couple medium-sized and small towns in it. It's farming, and it's really a pretty depressed district, all in all. I mean, there's not much manufacturing, and the district kind of lives or dies by agriculture and now with fracking.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what it is. But this district has been recently redistricted. The borders have been changed. Is it a competitive district?
By conventional wisdom, no. Not even close to competitive. The registration leans, no party has a majority, but there are many more Republicans than Democrats. The Democrats and the unaffiliated together make up more than the Republicans. But all in all, as an example, Douglas County's in the district. They put it in everything except for most of Highlands Ranch, and it's an extremely dense population that's very, very conservative.
Well, just to illustrate, Douglas County was served by, at one time, by Tom Tancredo, who is nationally known for his intolerance of immigration, and that's kind of a buzzword for intolerance,
yeah.
But extremely conservative, and so that is kind of what you, as a Democrat, were up against. But you said that you contacted the Democratic Party, and they didn't even want to be a part of your effort, did they?
Their first words at the state level were, we're not going to help you, but we'll expect you to give us money as the election gets close. The DCCC in Washington never returned an email or a phone call.
So they were just going to concede the district.
Absolutely.
And even though there was a sincere, knowledgeable Democrat with a populist appeal, they said, we're not interested. They wrote it off.
I actually took a trip to Washington, D.C. on my own to try and meet some of these folks and convince them, you know, that this is a doable thing and that I'm worth investing in. And their questions to me were, how much money do you have? And what's the voter registration? How did they perform in the last election? They didn't want to know about my ideas. They didn't want to know how hard I've been working. It didn't matter that I was running against a Michelle Bachmann type right wing in my
Ken Buck, the man who really misogynist, he hates women, you know, for his comments, or wants to relegate him back to the kitchen. And
when you check out his record as DA, he doesn't like Hispanics either.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter that that's what I was running against. It didn't matter what my ideas, my platform, how hard I've been working. None of that matters. If you've seen the movie Moneyball, they've taken our democracy and they've turned it into Moneyball.
And that's a frightening scenario. And I think you and I once spoke off air where you told me that, you know, one of the first questions they asked you, or one of the things that they said is you raise $200,000 or something, and then they'll talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just think, really, is that the basis for a common man to be running for national political office anymore? Do you think that's representative in districts around the country?
I'm sad to say I think that under the current leadership of the party, and I'm not talking about the president, I'm talking about the leadership in
Debbie Wasserman Schultz,
Rick Palacio. I think under their leadership and other state level organizations, that is the philosophy, is put the money on the table or don't even talk to us.
And Howard Dean, whenever he was head of the National Democratic campaign, he had a 50-state policy, and perhaps he was a little bit more aggressive in saying, you know, don't give up anywhere, you know. And now there just seems to be an expediency to say, well, we're not going to fight there, we'll fight here. And I believe nationally they really only fought, I mean, some districts are given to the Democrats, some are given to the Republicans, and there were only a handful of truly competitive districts. For example, Colorado's 6th district.
Right.
You know, and they put resources into that, and even that was a futile effort, and it was kind of tragic. So they wouldn't give you money for advertising or campaign expenses. Did they provide any kind of organizational talent?
Not until... Well, no, organizational talent, no. They didn't provide me any of that help at all. I had a volunteer campaign manager for all the campaign. I worked with a consultant group out of New York, and the reason they were working for me is because Peter Brown, one of the partners, is originally from Fort Collins and cares deeply about 4CD, and he looked at me and he believed that I had the platform, the character, all the right pieces to be able to win if I could get the money to be competitive.
Yeah, and the money would be used for advertising, for traveling to get out into the communities and so forth. You know? I mean, this was not something that you were looking for, any kind of grandiose expenditures or wild-eyed staff or anything like that. You just wanted to get the common man's message out so people would consider that and vote for you.
Right.
And were you given access to, like, a party's donor list where they might say, hey, try and hit up these people, maybe they'll contribute something?
No. I had to pay the party just to get voter lists. And the when it came to help with fundraising, very late in the campaign, they offered to, you know, kind of give me some coaching. By then, I'd already secured the services of a professional fundraiser, at a very discounted rate. It only lasted a month because it was too late, because the party, they weren't just not helping me. They were saying to the donors, don't worry about CD4. It's a waste of time. Give all your money to Mark Udall. Give all your money to Andrew Romanoff. Give your money to Hickenlooper. Don't give it to Vic.
And so once again, they parceled everything out, and they threw you to the dogs, essentially.
Early in the campaign, I had somebody from the DNC go 100 miles into my district at Morgan County, and the Morgan County Dems had a yearly picnic, and I was there to speak. He came out to speak also, and the reason he was there was to say, again, 100 miles into my district, hey guys, Andrew Romanoff needs your help. We need you to give your volunteer hours and your money to him.
So they were poaching.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Well, I'll tell you what, Vic, let's break for a commercial. When we come back, we're going to talk about you going out into the district and seeing what the responses were, what the obstacles were, and talk about your perceptions. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Okay, we're talking with Vic Myers, who is a common man who ran for the U.S. Congress and lost, and he has an important lesson for us all to hear. And you're listening to him here on the Tim Danhey Show. We'll be right back. We, the people of the United States of America, reject the U.S. Supreme Court Citizens United ruling and other related cases and move to amend our Constitution to firmly establish that money is not speech and that human beings, not corporations, are persons entitled to constitutional rights. Go to movetoamend.org. Add your voice to the 350,000 people who say, enough. This is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. You preserve a nation one community at a time, with shared knowledge and an informed electorate, with many voices speaking with civility and integrity. And we will preserve our nation when we participate. We learn, we discuss, we vote. We are the Coffee Party USA. Join us today, coffeepartyusa.com. The Tim Danhey Show at danhey.com is where you go when you want to listen to investigative and thoughtful discussion, when you want to understand the issues without the agendas. We discuss government, but not politics, world affairs, economics, social issues, justice, many topics. And every Friday, we have fun and talk about global authors and their new books. And the subjects range beyond simple description. Come listen and download at danhey.com. Be one of the listeners who value honest discussion you won't hear anywhere else. Danhey.com. Welcome back to the Tim Danhey Show. We're broadcasting from Lost Coffee in Castle Rock, Colorado today. And it's really an honor, an eye-opening honor, to talk with a gentleman named Vic Myers. And Vic Myers is a man with a full-time job who is a common man.
I got to clear up the full-time job part.
Okay.
I had a full-time job.
Okay.
I actually left it to focus on the campaign. And
okay, gave up a full-time job.
Yeah.
It's not like you had a trust fund backing you or tiding you over anything. You gave up the job for the campaign and try and run for the U.S. Congress in Colorado's 4th District. And you lost, but you're hearing his story about about the reality of it all. And it's a stunning story. And we've talked about the party support and the money involved and so forth. But, Vic, your platform was populist. You know, I know that you wanted to rein in the banks. You know, you had things that really everybody in both parties, like country of origin,
right,
labeling. Yeah, I mean, you had it all. And you and I talked about a number of issues. You're well-versed. You're able to express yourself well on these issues. Were you able to schedule public speaking engagements without any difficulties? Or
it was more difficult than I thought it would be. And anywhere I went, the Democratic Party, the local Democratic parties, the county level, were excited and very helpful. When it came to setting up interviews on the traditional radio shows and stuff like that, there were some in the Far East, that Eastern Plains, that were very receptive, others not so much. Newspaper interviews, great example, Longmont Times Call. I couldn't buy an interview with them.
For a congressional campaign?
Yeah, we dogged one of the reporters at the Cinco de Mayo thing, and he told me, my editors told me to cover the Chihuahua race.
Are you a Chihuahua race over
a congressional yeah,
district at the
Longmont Times Call?
That's absolutely incredible. But how about organizations like the Rotary or the Chamber of Commerce's the economic development places around the Eastern Colorado? Were they willing to take you in and listen to what you had to say sincerely?
In fairness to them, part of the problem there was me not having a professional campaign manager to set some of this stuff up. We did a little bit of that, not nearly as much as I would like to. But at the same time, they were calling up Ken Buck and inviting him.
Okay. Because that's what you answered the question. Although the effort wasn't there, they should have said, in a true...
If they were really looking for the public interest to educate the public, they would have brought both.
And then that leads to the question, and I know what the answer is going to be on this, because it happens everywhere. Did the heavily favored Republican, in the interest of democracy and having an enlightened electorate, ever offer to debate you or accept an offer from you to debate?
This is one of my favorite anecdotes of the campaign, because he went on the Aaron Harbor show. You know, as soon as he was nominated by his party, on July 1st, Aaron Harbor show had him on. I called up the Aaron Harbor show, no. And then he went on the Aaron Harbor show and said that, because I'd met Ken at one of the parades, I want to say the July 4th parade, and I challenged him then. I said, we got 22 counties, let's do 22 debates. And he says, oh, yeah, sure, no problem, I don't run from anything. And then he went on the Aaron Harbor show and told Aaron that not only did I challenge him to 22, but he said that he would do 44, but I backed out. And then he went to the Greeley Tribune and told them that he agreed to do 22 debates. But when it came time to set them up, he wouldn't. We did do a couple of debates, like League of Women Voters in Greeley, one he couldn't avoid. Pueblo Chieftain set one up in...
Pueblo Public Chieftain.
Yeah, uh-huh. Set one up in Lahana. Of course, they didn't cover it. Even though they were the moderator, they had a tiny little piece in their paper. They didn't advertise it or anything. So there was that one. But there were public forum after public forum where we were both invited, and he wouldn't go. There was League of Women Voters did one in Sterling. You know, they every time I went out there, they were grateful, not because I'm super special, but because they're so accustomed to the congressional candidates ignoring that part of the state.
Right.
And the League of Women Voters set up a public forum there, and I said I would go, and Buck said he wouldn't, and their policies, if he doesn't agree to it, then I can't go without him.
Well, can I kind of tell you a story that parallels this? I once ran for town council in the town of Parker, Colorado.
Oh,
and
bless you.
And I have my own set of views and everything, which is not part of the Douglas County party machine that you expressed earlier. And we had this debate, and there were like five candidates, maybe six or seven, something like that, and three of them were going to be elected to the town council. And I waxed them all. I got the crowd excited. They liked what I had to say, you know, went through item by item. And so the head of the Republican Party comes up to me and says, boy, you really won that debate. And then they canceled the rest of the debate.
Funny how that works, huh?
It's amazing, isn't it? And so, I know what you're up against with this. And
that was another, you know, I said that was my favorite anecdote of this. One of my biggest frustrations is when we did meet, when I did get a group of people together, I headed out of the ballpark. I was received wonderfully. I got tons of good feedback. And I know that when I could get a group of people and when I could get on a stage with him, I was reaching people, and I was convincing people that I was the better candidate. But I just couldn't get enough of that.
Yeah, and especially places like the Longmont Times Courier and Pueblo Chieftain not covering it. And those are your two biggest towns in the area.
Well, Pueblo's not in it.
Oh, that's right.
But the Chieftain covers all of southeastern Colorado.
Exactly. So looking forward for democracy, really,
mm-hmm.
If someone... If the Democratic Party were to back a candidate in this district, this heavily Republican rural district, Midwest, you know, just like Nebraska or Kansas, really, if they had the money and support, could a Democrat win in this district?
If we make some changes in how we as a party approach being Democrats. That's why I'm actually running for the Colorado Democratic Party chair now.
Good for you. Good for you. And... because there is that battle within the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, are we running for the people or are we running for the money? You know,
exactly.
And so that's the big the Republicans have to decide whether to go Tea Party or to be conservatively conciliatory, or that's their conundrum. And the Democrats have to do the same: do we run to the money or do we run to the people?
Right.
And so I know where you're going with this, and so you let me know.
I frame it a little differently. Is the Democratic Party going to stand up and start fighting for what we believe in, or are we going to keep letting the Republicans define us?
Well, and that's an important issue, really kind of towards wrapping up. The next congressional elections in 2016, should any Democrat even bother to contest the election, or should we just give it to the Republicans? And if somebody wanted to do it, what advice would you offer?
Well, you mentioned Howard Dean earlier. If I make it to, if I get elected as party chair for the state, then every district is going to be competitive. That's my philosophy. We don't give them anything. We fight everywhere, and that's what makes us competitive. That's what makes us win, and I believe we can, because it's not a Tea Party district. It's a district where people want to know that somebody's going to fight and stand up, and I believe that a Democrat can win. I think if I'd had the money, I could have won. There's a young man in Weld County. His name's Dustin Urban. I think he would make an outstanding candidate because he's extremely smart. He's well-versed in the issues of agriculture. He's energetic. He's got all the right pieces.
Well, you know, and it may, whenever you describe your experience and Dustin Urban's potential, really it's a matter of running on facts and not fear.
Right.
You know, if the Democrats can present the facts, we can overcome the fear-mongering from the other side. And
well, and we need help. You know, if we replay the 2014 election, and suppose I did have $1 million, I would have been much more competitive. But look at how much money was spent for Mark Udall, for Andrew Romanoff. We still had the problem of nationally, the image of the Democratic Party is not being willing to fight. I think it was Eisenhower maybe that said something along the lines of people will vote for the guy that's fighting for the wrong thing before they'll vote for somebody who won't fight at all.
Well, really, Vic, you know, and I know we're kind of straying, but there's an important lesson here. Like Mary Landrieu, as an example, down in Louisiana running for Senate, she sold out. And it's not like the Democrats went or the independents went and voted Republican. It's just the Democrats really said, why bother to vote at all? And nationally, we had some of the lowest turnout numbers because we couldn't back our candidates because we really couldn't distinguish a reason why to vote for them.
Alison Lundgren Grimes, I think she's maybe a better example.
In Kentucky.
She didn't have the fortitude to stand up and say, yeah, I voted for Obama.
Yeah.
I'm proud of it.
Yeah, it killed her.
If she would have done that, I think she would have had a much, much better chance of pulling it out.
Yeah, and I think the same thing happened in the governor's race or in Maryland. I mean, there's examples all across the country. And I had somebody on the show, we were talking right after the elections, did they run for the votes or did they run for the money?
Yeah,
and
that's a question that needs answered, isn't it?
It is. Well, Vic Myers, bless you for trying to run for Congress. And thank you for having the courage to come here and speak honestly about that experience. And I wish you nothing but the best as you try and work within the Democratic Party in Colorado to see if we can't stand for something.
Yeah.
And so thank you very much for being on the Tim Danahy Show.
Thanks for having me on. I look forward to it again as the new party chair, and maybe I'll come back and talk to you about party issues again.
Anytime you want. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Welcome to this episode of Danahy.com's American History Minute, a one-minute story about little-known events. And here's today's story. In 1863 at Gettysburg, Joshua Chamberlain and the 20th Maine Infantry were ordered to hold the southern end of the Union line. If he failed, the Confederate Army would collapse the Union line and encircle the north. Gettysburg would be lost. The battle was furious and bloody. Chamberlain was malarial and wounded in both legs, but he led his men on the front line until his men ran out of ammunition and defeat was imminent. Chamberlain simply said, "Bayonet," and his word spread down the line. So, without bullets, Chamberlain and the inspired men charged the surprised Confederates and held the Union Army's southern flank. As a result of Chamberlain's courage throughout the Civil War, Ulysses Grant selected Chamberlain to accept the flag of surrender from Robert E. Lee at Appomattox. Upon receiving the flag, Chamberlain's men did not yell, cheer, or shout at the defeated Confederates. Chamberlain and his men silently snapped to attention and saluted. They saluted courageous fellow Americans. The world learned that America would once again stand together. This story has been provided by the Tim Danahy Show. Please like us on Facebook at Tim Danahy Show and follow us on Twitter at hashtag Tim Danahy Show. And thank you for listening at Danahy.com.
So that concludes today's Lunch with Loudon show and rebroadcast of the Tim Danahy Show. We will see you after the first of the year, and we hope you have a great holiday season.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning laugh. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy. What you knowin'? I come to watch your flowers growin'. Ain't you got no rhymes for me? Do it, do do, feel.